evening and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you from the English service of The Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Peter Clotty in Washington, D.C. A two-day summit of the United Nations World Tourism Organization Commission of Africa ends in Mauritius.
We're here in Mauritius for the Commonwealth to make a contribution to the 66th meeting of the WTO dealing with tourism in Africa.
Sierra Leone's main opposition plans to determine the group's response to a lawmaker challenging the party's boycott of parliament.
On one hand, he's calling for peace, he's calling for common sense to prevail, he's asking for the older folks or the moral guarantors within the APC, within our political party to appeal to us to take a seat in parliament. On the other hand, he's also allegedly accusing the APC of many, many ills.
And the leader of Uganda's main opposition dismisses demands by a section of the party for his resignation.
We are trying to address an allegation where our founding father, Colonel retired Dr. Kizza Besigye, who is known to many in this country, made an allegation that he had intelligence information that money was received from the ruling NRM government to facilitate my and other candidates' campaign.
Those stories and more coming up on Nightline Africa. The summit of the United Nations World Tourism Organization Commission of Africa ended in Mauritius Friday. The theme was Rethinking Tourism for Africa, Promoting Investment and Partnerships, Addressing Global Challenges. Patricia Scotland, the Secretary General of the Commonwealth, spoke at the meeting. She emphasized the need for financial support to help small islands development states or SIDS to transform their tourism sector, especially since many are already heavily in debt. I caught up with the Commonwealth Secretary General via Skype and asked her to shed light on the critical role of tourism in small island development states, including in Africa, and how their economies, which heavily depend on tourism, are more vulnerable to financial crisis, climate change, and pandemics. Here is part one of the interview.
Well, the first thing to say is that these last 3 years have been extremely traumatic for all of us, but particularly for small island developing states who are peculiarly vulnerable to climate disaster. So the question for us all is, if this is not going to be a one-off, how do we create sustainable tourism in a way that can deal with the climate disaster, to deal with the exogenous shocks like COVID, and the fact that food insecurity has really ramped up since the conflict between Russia and the Ukraine. So you've had this twisted knot of problems. So we're here in Mauritius for the Commonwealth to make a contribution to the 66th meeting of the WTO dealing with tourism in Africa.
So, Madam Secretary General, what do you think can be done to help the SIDS countries diversify their economies?
Well, what we are doing is looking at how you can find pooled opportunities, and instead of looking at individual entities within a country, can we look countrywide? Can we look at the region as a whole to make that region more attractive to our member states? And we've come up with our Commonwealth Tourism Project. It's supporting the countries in building a resilient and sustainable tourism sector through knowledge exchange, data sharing, and capacity building. And we've come up with a project. We've called that project the Commonwealth Their Future, Our Action Project, which really helps SIDS build economic resilience. It has created two essential tools. The first is the Common Pool Asset Structuring Strategy, which we call COMPASS, which is consolidating individual finance applications into country-wide opportunities, making investment more appealing. However, we know that our work alone is not enough. I'm sure you've heard of the works we've done with our Climate Finance Access Hub, which is putting climate finance advisors in our member states. And we have right here in Mauritius, where I am today, the Commonwealth Climate Finance Access Hub, which is working directly with the main funds who are giving money or potentially can give money and to help facilitate those applications. Now, with just a relatively small investment of $6 million, we have already delivered into the hands of our member states, small member states, more than $310 million, with $500 million in the pipeline. This is for adaptation and mitigation. And we know that if we could find the money to give every country in our Commonwealth who would like to have a climate finance advisor an advisor, that we would exponentially be able to improve the money made available to our small states. And this is seed corn money that's bearing very great fruit. So it's one of the things. We've got common sense, and we've got so many other things that I'm sure we can.
I wanted to ask you about what other things the Commonwealth is doing in this regard, but how accepting are these countries, these seed countries, to embrace the solutions you're giving them and to implement them to help them?
Well, there is a hunger for these sorts of initiatives because we crafted them with our member states. We entered into a process with the member states to bring our young people together, to bring our best and brightest problem solvers together, and with Cranebridge, and working with the UN, WTO, with the IMF, we created the Commonwealth Blue Charter to work on oceans, where our members, 49 of our members, are participating strongly in our action group. And if you look at where we were in 2018, when the Blue Charter was launched, and where we are now, you can see the improvements that there have been by all of us working together.
Patricia Scotland is the Secretary General of the Commonwealth. She spoke with me from Mauritius capital, Port Louis. Join us on Sunday for the concluding part of the conversation. In Sierra Leone, the main opposition All People's Congress, or APC, is planning to establish a disciplinary committee to investigate and determine the group's response to a lawmaker who violated the party's boycott of parliament. This after Mohamed Bangura agreed to be sworn in and to take his seat in parliament. The move was hailed by Abbas Bundu, the Speaker of Parliament. Local media also reports the speaker's call for the rest of the APC lawmakers to participate in the legislature. He warned that he will declare their seats vacant if they refuse to attend. Citing irregularities and rigging, the APC rejected the outcome of the recent election and instructed parliamentarians to boycott the lawmaking body. Attorney Osman Timbo is an APC member of parliament and the general secretary of the opposition party. He tells me that the party stands by its position to continue the boycott until its demands are met.
I see that on one hand, he's calling for peace, he's calling for common sense to prevail. He's asking for the older folks or the moral guarantors within the APC, within our political party, to appeal to us to take a seat in parliament. On the other hand, he's also allegedly accusing the APC of many, many ills. Honestly, knowing who Abbas Bundo is, I don't even feel that message is coming from him. The message, the language doesn't sound like him. The tone doesn't sound like him. But whatever the case, if he's the person who said so, or whatever, or whoever said that, we are not fazed by that. We believe that we still maintain that the elections were stolen from us, and that we're calling for, we've made certain demands as contained in, in the party's press release of the 30th of June. Key amongst them is for the recount of all the votes and also the publication of the election results, a polling station. Until that is done, we still intend to continue holding our positions, as in abstaining from participation in governance.
Local media report is saying that the Speaker of Parliament is displeased that the APC members of Parliament are not representing their constituents and may decide to even declare your position vacant if you refuse to attend parliamentary sessions. As a member of Parliament elected from the APC who has decided not to go to Parliament due to concerns that you have over the recent general election, what's your reaction to this?
The law is very clear on how it can be replaced or how a seat can be declared vacant. The Constitution of Sierra Leone, as well as the standing orders of Parliament, are very clear. And they cannot just declare a seat vacant. So there's a procedure to be followed. And until that is followed, we are not worried about it. And again, instead of threatening us or instead of telling us to go to Parliament or thinking about our action, you have to think about what caused the problem in the first place. Let's address that. I mean, it's only after we address that that we can talk about solutions. Or you can tell us to go to Parliament. We did not just say we're not going to Parliament because we don't want to go to Parliament, but because something is amiss. So let them first deal with that, then we'll talk about going to Parliament. And our position is informed by the decision of the people who voted for us. We did not just sit by ourselves and said, oh, we are not going there. We were actually told by our people not to go, or the majority of the people who voted for.
Honorable Mohamed Bangura, an APC member, decided to take his seat. He was sworn into office. Doesn't this undermine the whole premise for which you are not going to Parliament?
Well, he did it on his own volition. The party will take action against Mohamed Bangura very soon, in line with the constitution of the APC. They will take action. Mohamed Bangura and others must remember that they're representing their political parties, especially so in this proportional representation system, as opposed to old constituency-based system. So the party can decide, also under our constitution, to withdraw him from parliament. So there's a process to be followed.
Some supporters of the APC, I understand, are also saying that it would not be fair for the APC to punish him for deciding to represent his people who voted for him in the constituency. So if the party decided not to go to parliament and he decided to represent his people, that is being hailed by people from cross-party lines, how then does the party go ahead to punish him for standing up for his people, his constituents in the region?
I didn't say he would be punished as such, but the party has taken a policy decision, yeah? And if you go against that policy decision, it behoves the disciplinary committee of the party to look into that and then come up with whatever it is, a conclusion on the way forward. So whatever the disciplinary committee decides will be adhered to.
So how soon will this meeting be held and a decision taken? Take me through the process.
So a national disciplinary committee will be set up, and we're in the process of setting it up. And we must make this clear that we're not setting it up because of Mohamed Bangura. We're setting it up because it's part of the law, I mean, the constitution of the APC. We should have set it up before. I, as Deputy National Secretary General, we took office in March of this year, and we were preoccupied with the elections. So we could not set it up. So that committee and many other committees will be set up in the shortest time. Then afterwards, they will start the process. By the Constitution, within 2 months, they should have concluded whatever investigation and give a report.
Attorney Usman Timbo is an APC Member of Parliament and the General Secretary of the Opposition Party. He spoke with me from the Sierra Leonean capital, Freetown. In Senegal, the main opposition leader, Ousmane Sonko, was arrested following a tussle with state security forces near his home. This after the opposition leader was accused of stealing a phone from an officer and issuing an inflammatory message on a social media platform. The security agents were allegedly filming the opposition leader on his way home after his Friday prayers at a mosque on Friday. His supporters say he's unlikely to be released until next week. They accused the authorities of intimidation and harassment, adding that this is yet another attempt to prevent Sonko from running for president. For the latest development, I reached reporter Alpha Jallo in the Senegalese capital, Dakar.
Well, there were mixed reactions. You know, some people said that, you know, they knew that Sonko would be arrested and the government was just, waiting for the slightest opportunity to arrest him. You just said that, you know, reasons have not been advanced, but later the prosecutor said that he was arrested, because he harassed a female police officer near his house when he was coming for Friday prayers. And he also, on his, Facebook page, he was calling for, violence. He called on the Senegalese youth, especially the youth, to, go out in the street and fight. So these were some of the reasons why the prosecutor advanced where the reasons why he was arrested.
Alpha, some people are suggesting that he stole the phone. That might have contributed to his arrest. What do you say to that?
Well, yes, that is actually, in fact, people saying these are all, some people, said that these are all these reasons, are all baseless, because they said that if Sonko, how could Sonko, steal, a phone from a female police officer? But that was not the reason, because what happened was that Sonko was coming from Friday prayers and he thought that maybe there were officers, stationed near his residence who were just spying his activities. So they were taking, photos, or they were filming him. That was the reason why he just brutalized, or he approached the female officer, brutalized him, and then snatched the phone and went to his house. And when the security forces came, they also to arrest him, he refused to open, and they had to scale the fence and get you found him inside and arrested him.
Since it's the weekend, it might suggest that the earliest time he could get bail possibly could be Monday. Is that the situation?
That is very correct, because it is now weekend. Even yesterday, one of his lawyers was on TV. He said that it is not likely that he could be freed today or tomorrow, because it is the weekend. So maybe they are going to, he will be interviewed, or he will be asked to explain, the reason why he just behaved like that, towards the female police officer. But everything could be done maybe after the weekend. So many people are saying that they think that Mr. Sonko might spend the whole weekend, in the hands of the security forces, especially the police.
Some people are suggesting that this is yet another attempt by the authorities to frustrate him. And this is part of the plan to intimidate and harass him and to prevent him from running for the presidency. What are your thoughts?
This is exactly what everybody's saying, especially, people, party, those who belong to his party and his supporters and some of his sympathizers. And even the ordinary people, Senegalists, are saying that the government, this is just, to prevent from Sonko, prevent President Sonko from to contest the forthcoming presidential election. So all these charges or all these, charges are politically motivated. They are saying that. But then the other issue is that they said that maybe the arrest is also good for Mr. Sonko, because if you could recall, during his last court appearance, he was not there. So he was sentenced in absentia. And in the Senegalese judicial system, if you are sentenced in absentia, if you are arrested, that means, you know, that sentence is, you know, I mean, null and void. So people are saying that maybe this is also a very good chance for him, because that case, I mean, that case against Agisar should be, maybe they will, it has to be restarted fresh. So people are saying that it's also a very good, I mean, point for Mr. Sonko, this arrest.
Alpha Diallo is a reporter in Senegal. He spoke with me from the Senegalese capital, Dakar. Nigeria, the convener for Concern Nigeria for the Protection of Human Rights and Rule of Law, has petitioned Nuhu Ribadu, the National Security Advisor to the President. Deji Adeyanju is seeking the arrest and prosecution of Asare Dokubo, a well-known militant and political figure. Adeyanju says threats by Asare to harm Rivers State Governor Siminalayi Fubara will undermine the country's peace and stability. In a recent video, which has gone viral, Asare threatened to retaliate if the governor continues to create problems for him. He also accused the governor of rigging recent elections, an accusation supporters of the governor sharply reject. I reached rights activist Deji Adeyanju to find out more about his petition.
The premise for this petition to the National Security Advisor is that the National Security Advisor oversees the security architecture of the country, and it is the one who is having the responsibility of ensuring that there's no complete breakdown of law and order, and is the one who briefs the president on a daily basis about the security happenings in the country. And the threats issued by Dokubo Asare, you know, is a national security threat in our view. And this is the reason why we have petitioned the National Security Advisor to not just arrest, but also, you know, prosecute Dokubo Asare for some of his activities in recent times and the specific threat that he issued against the River State Governor Sim Fubara. It is our view that non-state actors should not be emboldened and empowered to the level of becoming so strong to the point of issuing direct threats to a sitting governor. The crime of the sitting governor is that the sitting governor charged soldiers to ensure that there's no breakdown of law and order in River State, and specifically saying that the soldiers should go after armed men, you know, that are disturbing River State, who are working for Dokubo Asare. That is the premise upon which Dokubo Asare now issued a threat, you know, against the governor.
But some people are saying, Deji, but some people are suggesting that he is merely defending himself and that the governor was the first to go on the attack.
The governor is saying that the activities of his men in River State constitute a security breach, and that the governor simply charged security agencies in the state, especially the military, to go after them, that they are already constituting security breaches in the state. Yes, whatever prism you use to look at this, it is simple that we cannot continue to allow non-state actors act as if they are state agencies of government, parade guns in the face of the fact that Emefiele, Godwin Emefiele, the immediately suspended CBN governor, is being charged on a two-count charge of legal possession of firearm for a licensed shotgun. But Dokubo Asare daily, weekly, brazenly, on the internet, videos are there, evidence abound, parades himself and his boys with sophisticated rifles, including RPGs. Even in the said video, there were people with RPGs in the said video. You know,
Deji, some people are suggesting that the governor, and for that matter, the state, the federal government, should investigate rather than just straight away arresting, which will be an infringement on his fundamental human rights. A human rights defender that you are, they said your call is misplaced because there has to be an investigation first.
How can anyone threatening to create something bigger than Boko Haram to terrorize the state of the River State, someone threatening to a sitting governor, how can it be said to be exercising his fundamental human rights? How do the ingredients of the threats against the sitting governor and against the state, how do they constitute expression of freedom of speech or any other freedoms enshrined in Chapter 4 of our Constitution? In my view, I sincerely do not see it.
But some people said Dokubu Asare seemed to have protection from so-called powers that be, that emboldens him to make those statements that he's making. Some people said all some of the statements that he's been making are just mere bluster, and there's nothing towards it. He's not created any anarchy. He's not attacked anybody. In fact, he has been protecting and helped protect people from being attacked by unknown gunmen and assailants.
That assertion is not true, completely true. Because when you look at it critically, the president is at liberty to meet bad boys at night. The body language of the president should not, or government policy should not support criminality. What the Dokubu Asare are doing, majority of them are the ones who are involved in fire bunkering in the Niger Delta. They are the ones that, majority of his boys are the ones actually kidnapping people in the Niger Delta. So how can, even when he was actively in the creeks, those were his modus operandi. And his modus operandi has not changed. You know, he's currently seeking political patronage with the president. You understand? But that does not give him the impetus to threaten a sitting governor. Doesn't just make any sense.
Deji Adeyanju is a human rights activist and the convener for Concern Nigeria for the Protection of Human Rights and Rule of Law. He spoke with me from the Nigerian capital, Abuja. Results of the recent referendum show a majority of citizens support dropping French as an official language, though it will be used as a working language in the West African country. Reports say about 96.9% of the total vote cast approved the new constitution that removes French as an official language. 13 local languages such as Bambara, Dodo, and Bobo will now become official languages. The new document also gives the president broad powers, a move critics say will undermine democracy and encourage dictatorship. For the latest development, I reach Salif Tigana. He is the CEO of Tigana Technology, a tech company based in the capital, Bamako.
The president explained that these ideas was from the National Congress that we had. So from that Congress, the population have decided to take the national languages like Bambara, Senufo, Fulani to promote them to national language, official language, and then French to make French a work language.
How would this work if French is a working language and the local languages like Bambara? How is this going to work? Because sometimes some of these local languages are not spoken internationally. So how would this work?
You are right. They are not spoken internationally, and some of them are not even writing. So I think it's going to be hard. But the thing is, so far, we're still working with the French, like at the government level, the documents, and even the national television, everything, the news are in French. And I think it is all about semantic, you know. Okay, just to say French is no more official language, I think it's just about a semantic. But in practical term, I think French will always remain the language that we are going to use in international affairs and also in trading with other nations and communicating with other nations.
But based on the referendum, how are Malians reacting to it, at least for the people that you have spoken with? What are they telling you about the results of the referendum?
Well, there is two parts of people that one side it is that were opposed to referendum, that includes some of the political parties and associations, and also some religious leaders. They have called to vote against the constitution. And then you have a majority that expressed they're willing to vote for yes for the constitution. And then right after the results comes out, and then we have not heard from the opposition.
Some people are also suggesting that the referendum as passed gives interim president, a military ruler, ruling for a very, very long time. How do you respond to this?
Well, I think if you look at the new constitution, it's obvious that the power of the president has increased. But also there are some counterbalances. I think the president can be impeached by the parliament, which it's not quite obvious that that can happen. But I think there are many other parts that are very positive in that constitution. For example, if you are elected with the one party, you cannot switch the party during your mandate. Those are very positive. And also if you come to in terms of fighting against the corruption and then injustice, all those things are the positive things on it. But yes, the present power has increased. Now we are going to wait and see if Asimi Goita is gonna run or not. For now, so far, he did not indicate that he's going to run for president.
But overall, are Malians satisfied with the referendum that they had? Because some people are suggesting that the figures that were announced, that over 90% of the people voted positively for the constitution, was just manipulation.
I don't think that is quite a right statement, but I think a lot of people voted for different reasons. For example, myself, I voted for the constitution because, for one point, the Siklar, where it says Mali is going to remain a Siklar state. So if we had changed, or if the constitution, if the vote, yes, have failed, what is going to happen? I think no politician, no Malian politician in the future will put the secularity into the constitution file anymore. I mean, everybody would be afraid to put it there because they would think that if you put it there, the imams and then religious people will call against it, and you are going to lose the election.
Salif Tigana is the CEO of Tigana Technology, a tech company based in Mali. He spoke with me from the Malian capital, Bamako. You are listening to Nightline Africa on the English service of The Voice of America. I'm your host, Peter Clotty, in Washington, D.C. And coming up in the second half of Nightline Africa, the Saturday music spot from our collection of music from the continent. But first, in Uganda, the leader of the Opposition Forum for Democratic Change, or FDC, says demands by a section of the party for his resignation are unjustified and unfair. Patrick Oboye Amuriat also says the party is suffering from what he says is the failure of some members to recognize his leadership. His remarks come after the party launched an investigation into allegations that Amuriat and the Secretary General of the FDC, Nandala Mafabi, allegedly received some funds from Ugandan President Yoweri Museveni, a charge both men deny. Meanwhile, some supporters of the party say if tensions within the FDC and its alleged rift are not adequately resolved, the group could fall apart. But Patrick Oboye Amuriat tells me that members will continue to operate within party structures to find solutions to the challenges.
What is happening today in the FDC is that we are trying to address an allegation where our founding father, Colonel retired Dr. Kizza Besigye, who is known to many in this country, made an allegation that he had intelligence information that money was received from the ruling NRM government to facilitate my and other candidates' campaign, the election of 2021. And so when this came to the public domain, it became necessary for us to examine ourselves. And of course, you know, in this country, receiving money directly from Mr. Museveni while being in the opposition Israel is supposed to be a taboo, something that people take so seriously. And, you know, it could cause the lack of confidence in individual political players who may have been mentioned in this kind of scam. And so this is really the situation that the FDC faces today, where names of key players within the FDC, the top leadership of the FDC, including myself, have been mentioned as having received with the intent to sell or get compromised by the Museveni money.
I understand now the party appears to be divided. Are we going to see a split in the FDC? Because remember, the FDC has a record. At least General Muntu, who was then the president of the party, left with some people. Now, we are seeing two centers of power within the FDC. People are expressing concern that there could be a split within the FDC. Is this a real possibility, and how are you addressing this?
Well, a split is something that we would really want to avoid at this moment in time. Of course, given what you have just observed about the departure of one of our key players, former president and former secretary general, who left the party on an account of an election that they felt they had been unfairly treated in. This, however, is a matter that the truth will be able to either exonerate, or it may make certain players within the organization culpable. This is really, I think, a different cup of tea that we're dealing with.
Patrick, the elephant in the room is the allegation that you received approximately or more than $5 million and that you and Mafabi failed to account to the party of the funds allegedly received from the NRM. My question to you is, did you receive any money and refused to account for them?
First of all, the actually bigger elephant in the room is the different versions of this money, because some people have said we received $5 million. Some people have claimed we received $50 million. The other ones say no, think that is no, it's 2.5 million. You know, it depends on who is actually speaking. These are really wild allegations. The fact of the matter is that this kind of money or any money was not received directly or indirectly by any official of the party, whether it be it me or the Secretary General of the party. And this really, I think, just plays for propaganda purposes.
Some people are suggesting that perhaps it's time for you to step down based on some of these allegations. Do you think those who are calling for your resignation are justified?
I think that they are not only just not justified, but also unfair to the holders of the office of the Secretary General and the President, because really today what we are dealing with is an allegation. And I think that what the committee of the elders was concentrated on is the evidence that needed to be brought forward. Now, I think that whether or not we should step down for further investigations depends on whether enough evidence has been adduced to find us culpable to the act for which we have been accused.
Patrick Oboy Amuriat is the leader of the Opposition Forum for Democratic Change, or FDC. He spoke with me from the Ugandan capital, Kampala.
The Teachers Union of Malawi plans to meet Education Minister Madelito Kambawa Wirima and other stakeholders to help employ more qualified teachers for public schools. The group that represents teachers in the Southern African country says it's committed to deploying more across the country as part of the effort to boost education. The group that represents teachers in the Southern African country says it's committed to deploying more teachers across the country as part of the effort to boost education. This after more than 3,000 applicants showed up for an interview that has only 60 positions open at a school in Inteo in Malawi's central region. Industry analysts say it appears the government does not have the resources to employ significant numbers of the trained teachers. Charles Kumchenga is the General Secretary of the Teachers Union of Malawi. He tells me that the administration must find ways of employing more capable instructors to improve education.
Thank you very much. As Teachers Union of Malawi, we are a little concerned on that because we are expecting all qualified teachers to be absorbed in the system. Looking at the number of teachers who are in different schools, so as the Teachers Union of Malawi, we are deeply concerned on that one.
Charles, have you been able to meet the authorities like the Minister of Education and other public officials to try to resolve this major concern?
Yes, we met last time. I think it was last week when we met the Minister of Education on the same issues. And we are also planning to meet again after next week, when the minister will be available and the other government officials. And we believe it will be at least a fruitful meeting, taking into account of the issue we raised last time. And the government gave us a nod on that one, just to show that it is also eager to absorb all the teachers.
Well, Charles, some people are saying that perhaps the government does not have the needed resources in order to absorb all these qualified teachers. What is your reaction to this?
Yes, definitely. In one way or the other, the government, you might say, it doesn't have resources to absorb all the teachers. And we know for sure in Malawi, we have also private schools where other teachers will also be absorbed. So we are sure that some of these teachers will be absorbed by the private sector, that is the private schools in the country. But all in all, we are looking for the absorption by the government itself. So it might be not all the teachers, because when we are talking of all teachers, remember that they were trained in cohorts or in phases. So we have cohort 13. Which has been absorbed. Then we have cohort 14, 15, and 16. Not all of them can be absorbed at once, but I think little by little, they'll be absorbed.
Some members of the Malawi Teachers Union are seeking permission to go and seek greener pastures abroad, and they are calling on the government to make it easier for them to go to other African countries and perhaps outside the shores of Africa to see greener pastures abroad. Some are saying this could negatively impact the education system in Malawi. What are your thoughts?
Yes, obviously it is even affecting the education in Malawi negatively on that one, just because if teachers are not enough in schools, and one teacher is having a lot of learners in his or her classroom, then that teacher will not be able to handle all the learners or the children at a given time. So because of that, I think it is quite difficult for the country to say we are having quality education. So in short, quality education is compromised in one way or the other. So in a true sense, we can say what is required is that the government must fight hard and must make sure that the all teachers are absorbed, although we know for sure that that cannot happen at once. So as Teachers Union of Malawi, we cannot just remain silent on that issue. We are still knocking on the door of the government so that those teachers have to be absorbed.
Would you say that the Teachers Union of Malawi has done enough
Oh, that's what we are doing at the meantime. That's what we are doing, because even before the recruitment of these teachers, it was the Teachers Union of Malawi that fought hard for those teachers to be recruited. And this is not the first time Teachers Union of Malawi had been fighting for the teachers. And we'll keep on fighting, and we'll keep on knocking on their doors so that at least those teachers are absorbed. To us, as a union, we feel it is not proper to train teachers and just dump them somewhere in the system, or just leave them at in their respective homes. Yet we are lacking qualified teachers in the country. So I think that one cannot solve the problem in our schools.
Charles Kumchenga is the General Secretary of the Teachers Union of Malawi. He spoke with me from the capital, Lilongwe. It's now time for music from African Collection. You are listening to Nightline Africa on the English service of The Voice of America. I'm your host, Peter Clotty, in Washington, D.C.
Been waiting on you for a couple minutes. No make a room, I gon' see me finish. Tell if you won't give me 1 minute, girl, I convince you I am that confident. 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 No make a room, I gon' see me finish. I convince you I am that confident. Something on my mind to make I tell you one time. Got some liquor and wine in my head, my girl. Tell me if you like. Say maybe we'll step outside. We can go ride outside in the night. In what's it been? In what's it go? Make I give you up close. I'm pushing out something. Go sweet you like when I'm missing. Got nothing.
Why you so shy? Don't go. Baby, don't leave me tonight. Ain't nobody else. Me and my girls chilling in a drop top cruising, cause I be somebody, somebody with me. Somebody, somebody with like somebody, somebody with bun somebody. And I just want to party sipping Bacardi. Oh boy, we friends and family. Oh boy, and songs and melody.
Continent, and we hope you enjoyed it.
Tell your friends about VOA Africa, music, sports, and news.
Nightline Africa comes to you on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC from the English service of the Voice of America. And from the rest of the Nightline team, including producer Michael Hobvey, we say a big thank you for joining us tonight. And remember, as the elders say, not everyone who close their eyes are asleep. And not all eyes that are wide open can see either. I'm your host, Peter Clotte, in Washington. Good evening, Africa.